Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. I'm going to go slightly off the beaten track today, slightly away from some of the things I normally talk about, and talk about things slightly more contemporary, i.e. the 1980s, which, let's face it, was only sort of 35 years ago. And I want to talk really about the sexual politics of Britain in the 1980s, and kind of the moral dimensions, if you can call it that, of Thatcherism, particularly the politics and the cultural politics surrounding sexuality, AIDS, and the AIDS crisis that really begins in the mid-1980s. One of the ways that we tend to think about Thatcherism is in economic terms, that there was supposedly in 1979, though this really happens later on in the Thatcher's era, this kind of economic break away from the consensus. Now, not only was that consensus coming to an end throughout the 1970s anyway, and some of the early adopters of more monetarist ideas were the Callaghan government, particularly Callaghan and Healey. But also, if you look at the Thatcher Manifesto in 1979, there's less which is overtly kind of economic and more that speaks in broadly what Mrs. Thatcher would have viewed as moral terms, that the state had taken away the rights of individuals to provide for themselves, to be responsible, to behave like grown-ups, and that a more moral nation was necessary, a nation that was not only self-reliant, but behaved itself, that knew how to behave, and not only was kind of economic individualism part of her manifesto, but also a strong sense of not just law and order, but Christian morality. And very often this dimension of Thatcherism gets overlooked an awful lot, which is why I wanted to talk about it today. Part of the conservative myth-making about the 1960s is that it had been this age of permissive values, that people had been able to be far more sexually liberal than they had previously been, that there had been the breakdown of the family as a result, that teenage crime had increased and lawlessness, and that the values of previous generations, particularly the generation that fought the war, was not being passed down, and that the knock-on effect had been an increase in things like soccer hooliganism in the 1970s, and that Britain appeared to be a more violent society in the 70s and 1980s than it had been. Certainly Britain in the 1980s, if you look at criminological research, suggests that it was a much more violent society. There appears to be this increase in violent crime that doesn't actually seem to be connected with any of the recessions of the 1980s, In essence, criminality, there seems to be some kind of relationship, and I'm speaking here as a historian, not as a sociologist, so please, if you're a sociologist, listen to this, shoot me down, correct me, but there appears to be some kind of relationship between urbanisation, social mobility, and dislocation and community change, between that and increases in crime. It's got very much to do with changes in attitudes towards sexuality, relationships, marriage, monogamy, an increase in secularism, and that kind of thing. However, and the fact is that during the 1960s, the majority of people were living fairly mundane lives in terms of the permissive society. Majority of people actually had largely conventional conformist attitudes. The social research done at the time suggests that by and large people did believe in marriage throughout the 1960s, did believe in having children within marriage, and did view adultery, homosexuality, and other sexual transgressions as being wrong. So a lot of the conservative myth-making about the 1960s is exactly that. It is myth-making, but this kind of gets carried through into the 1980s. The era of conservative dominance was a moment at which the ideas of the 60s could be undone, rather. The first major manifestation of Thatcherism's attempts to promote what was viewed as family values, heterosexuality and monogamy, was the prevention of the promotion of homosexuality in schools. So this is really, initially, the product of Britain's right-wing tabloid press, who campaigned that children should not be exposed to materials that promoted homosexuality in schools. And as with much of what Britain's right-wing tabloid press tends to do, there was actually very little evidence that anybody was being exposed to anything that promoted homosexuality whatsoever. In fact, no evidence. But this didn't prevent, in 1986, the Education Act introducing a section, Section 46, that specified that sex education should promote the value of family life, which was code really for suggesting that there is one version of family life, the nuclear family with heterosexual parents, and that monogamy was ultimately, in that context, what was considered to be normal. Section 28 of the 1988 Local Government Act outlawed the promotion of homosexuality or the publication of material with the intention of promoting homosexuality. It went further than the 1986 Act, and it suggested that any educational activity designed to promote teaching in any maintained school the acceptability of homosexuality was banned. And this the acceptability of homosexuality also has a pretended family relationship, and the use of pretended there is particularly divisive. The reason for this furore was the Daily Mail's publication of a story featuring a book which was used by the Education Service of the Greater London Council. The book was called Jenny Lives with Eric and Martin, and it wasn't a book that really promoted the notion of homosexuality. It was an educational book from the Netherlands which helped children who had gay parents to come to terms with and to process, obviously, the challenging emotions that this was inevitably in quite a homophobic society going to engender. So it was had more of a therapeutic purpose than a promotional purpose. The Daily Mail chose to call it homosexual propaganda, and this was latched onto by a group of Conservative MPs who were more interested, particularly Kenneth Baker, the Education Secretary at the time, who were more interested really in waging a war on the Greater London Council. The Greater London Council, obviously, was a left Labour council led by Ken Livingstone, and was synonymous in the eyes of the Conservatives as being everything that was wrong with local government in Britain. The national tabloid press liked to focus on the various activities of the Greater London Council, referring to it as really the loony left. There were initiatives designed to help black and ethnic minority people, initiatives designed to help women's groups, and really kind of the marginalised of society. This was during in the 1980s, obviously, politics and political discourse moves far to the right, and these kinds of things are seen as unacceptable or comical or ludicrous or worthy of contempt. And the accusation that the GLC was promoting homosexuality was so sensational that the actual realities of the situation were really, really quite lost. Now, the curious thing about the 1980s is that it is a time when more openly gay musicians, actors, performers and entertainers are able to not just be out, but also to articulate the experience of being gay in a homophobic society in a way that they had never been able to do before. British culture in previous decades, in the 60s and 70s, had been full of things like Carry-On films and the Dick Emery Show and things like that, which were laden with innuendo about homosexuality, but it was really something that went largely unspoken. You have, at this point in the 1980s, the Section 8 becomes a kind of a lightning rod, really, for activism. You have actors like Ian McKellen of Gandalf fame, activists like Peter Tatchell, and Michael Cashman, who was the first openly gay actor on EastEnders, popular British soap opera, in case you listen to this from abroad, who had the first gay kiss scene in EastEnders. And he and the three kind of leading lights in the development of the gay rights charity Stonewall in 1989, which was originally focused on the repeal of Section 28 and the unspoken problem in British society of violence against gay and lesbian people and transgender people.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
The acceptance that these were indeed hate crimes. There was at the same time, obviously, a ban on homosexuality in the armed forces, which was another key area of debate and struggle. So there is this kind of cultural conflict, I guess, waging throughout the 1980s on the subject of sexuality, And sexual politics are appropriated largely by the left during the 1980s. The irony for Margaret Thatcher is that she had gay colleagues, who many of them who weren't out, but she herself, I don't think it would be fair to describe her as a homophobe. She believed that society was best served by a kind of conservative family morality. The irony is that this was very often at odds with her her economics, which were putting immense pressures on family life in terms of working hours and employment stress, and the destruction of the nuclear family is accelerated really by the introduction of neoliberal economics into Britain. Not that that was all Margaret Thatcher's doing, but certainly something she's a champion for. Neoconservatism and neoliberalism are very uneasy bedfellows. But it was the diagnosis of the new disease of HIV in 1981 that had a profound change on sexual politics in the UK. The initial prognosis was that this was going to be an apocalyptic apocalyptic plague, if you will. There was enormous public ignorance on the subject, often fuelled by the press. And it was a disease that became associated wrongly, much to the disservice of many people wrongly, exclusively with gay men. There were high incidences initially of HIV and AIDS in the gay community, but in the 1990s, more heterosexual people began to catch the disease. And public ignorance resulted in increasingly homophobic attitudes. It was seen as a gay plague. And in 1987, three quarters of people who were surveyed on their attitudes towards homosexuality believed that it was always or mostly wrong. And to many people, the question of homosexuality was brought to them via the issue of HIV and AIDS for the first time. People that chose to consider it at all began to think of it as a result of this context. It was one area where Mrs. Thatcher was willing to make some kind of compromise. Apparently the story goes when she was given the report on AIDS, she simply said to the advisor who brought it to her, please just do something about it. And she, instead of suggesting abstinence, the government threw its weight behind a safe sex campaign. They were advised on probably what was the best approach at the time, and probably listened to some fairly good advice, and which promoted the use of condoms and the safe sex practices. I believe the advertisement at the time, AIDS Don't Die of Ignorance, was again so shocking and over the top and terrifying that actually it backfires, and people were disbelieving of the scope of the illness. I think that one of the great contributions of Britain of the 1980s really to our society now is the change in attitudes towards homosexuality that really happened, I think, probably in the 1990s and the 2000s. The conflicts of the 1980s and the kind of rather pioneering musicians and artists who refused to simply accept kind of ghettoisation status because of their sexuality have led really to, the knock-on effect has been a radical change in attitudes towards sexuality and a huge increase in tolerance and acceptance of gay and lesbian people in British society now, gay and lesbian transgender, I should say. In 1985, for example, Stephen Frears makes the film My Beautiful Laundrette, starring Daniel Day-Lewis, which features a love affair between two gay men. In EastEnders, as mentioned, it was the first gay kiss on British television, to which The Sun delightfully referred to it as a homosexual love scene between yuppie puffs where millions of children were watching. If you're listening from The Sun, thanks for that. In the same year, there was also the semi-autobiographical story of Jeanette Winterson's childhood, Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, which is a lesbian coming-of-age drama. And these things presented homosexuality in not just in an acceptable thing that we can tolerate, but in a positive light as the experience of people, which is quite outside the norm of many of the viewers. Or I say that many of the viewers perhaps actually had experience of homosexuality or had far more awareness of it within their relationships and families than people were really willing to let on. There were artists like the Pet Shop Boys, Boy George, Bronski Beat, and the Boy George becomes really the first out gay superstar. There were obviously performers like Freddie Mercury and George Michael. Their sexuality is an open secret, but by and large is undivulged. I think Freddie Mercury was quite candid about the fact that coming out as gay would be commercial suicide for a band that made most of their album sales from heterosexual audiences. The Bronski Beat album, Bronski Beat's breakthrough album was Age of Consent, which is a significant nod towards the kind of the issues surrounding gay culture, and their songs are about the loneliness of coming out as gay and trying to find your way in the world as a gay or lesbian person or transgender person in a homophobic culture. In 1992, for example, the film Peter's Friends is almost a kind of a movie which kind of articulates this sort of hangover from the 1980s as a real kind of nostalgia for the 80s in Peter's Friends. It's about a gay man gathering his friends together to tell them he's contracted HIV. Apologies if you are going to watch that film, spoiler alert. And one of the key figures in Four Weddings and a Funeral in 1994 is an out gay couple. There were artists who were happy to play with ideas of sexuality, such as Madonna, who was based her act on sexual ambiguity. And then this has become, within our culture, pop music now, so kind of de rigueur, all-pervading, that it hardly seems remarkable now. But obviously, acts like Madonna or David Bowie, but he really dates back to the 1970s, are people who were trailblazers in terms of making questions of sexuality mainstream and yet presenting set questions of sexuality as being key parts of cultural politics of the time. And it was in 1994 that John Major, Thatcher's successor, realised that kind of attitudes were changing, and invited Ian McKellen to 10 Downing Street to discuss gay rights, but at the same time launched his own misguided Back to Basics Family Values campaign, which a number of government ministers fell foul of when their affairs and loved children were revealed. And it was in the 2000s that the former Home Secretary under John Major and under Mrs. Thatcher, Michael Howard, came to really repent Section 28, which was repealed under Tony Blair. And it shows you really kind of the journey the Conservatives had gone on by the 1980s, not because of any kind of liberal or libertarian instincts at the heart of the party, but an acceptance that society and culture had changed, and if anything, it wasn't an issue for most people. It's not that people had suddenly embraced their libertarian selves, they had rather ceased caring, and the more out gay people, the more people had the ability to be out, the more a gay culture and a gay scene developed in Britain, and the more that it became unremarkable to have gay colleagues, gay neighbours, gay friends and gay relatives, the less of an issue culturally it has been, and the less it really helps to sell tabloid newspapers. What makes cultural shifts happen is always a very curious, ambiguous affair, and it's always very difficult to put your finger on it. I think a lot of it's got to do with economics and the increase in affluence, you know, and also communities moving apart, people becoming more socially mobile. Again, if you're a sociologist, please write in, because I probably need need some guidance on this one. But there is a very interesting process around the discourses and ideas about sexuality from the 1980s through to the 1990s and 2000s. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this and found it useful, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks, bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.